It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofana. Dan Berger, of course, here, and also our good friend Eric from Kokomo.
Good to see you, buddy.
Hey, good to be back.
You know, I was saying earlier, I think Kokomo is the only winery that's named after a Beach Boys song, unless there is a Help Me Rhonda Vineyard somewhere, but I don't think so. But I'm sure you didn't name it after the Beach Boys song.
You know, as much as it's a nice little song, it was my hometown, had to pay homage to the hometown there, so Kokomo, Indiana.
That's right.
And if you ever think about that Beach Boys song, and you show up to Kokomo, Indiana, you will be scratching your head and sorely disappointed. There's no white sandy beaches in the middle of Indiana.
No, there is not. I grew up in Michigan, so, we know. But, okay, we always have to start with the history of the winery and your history as well. So tell us all about Kokomo.
Yeah, Kokomo started in 2004, and I was working at a little winery in Dry Creek and had an opportunity to buy some Cabernet. And, I guess being in my 20s, I was nice and kind of young and dumb to the industry. I don't know. You kind of, didn't really know what I was getting into. I mean, it's been amazing, and I'm certainly glad I did it then. But, really, it's been one of those things where people, wow, how did you learn how to make wine? And I was counting. I guess I've done this will be my 17th harvest. So
Whoa. That's
how I've learned. I know, right? I mean, it's like, wow.
Did you go to UC Davis? Fresno?
I went to some classes at Davis. My degree's in business from Purdue. I just took some classes there. But I learned winemaking in the cellar. And I think that it's something that I still come harvest. I'm in the cellar. I enjoy it, working with my hands. And,
right on.
And that's where it's made, And then I was lucky enough to partner up with a grower. And we all know how important that is. We downplay him as the winemaker. That's just the grower, But kind of important that we get that good fruit and consistent every year.
Hell yeah.
Okay, it's really important. But I really fell into that one, partnering up with Randy Peters, who's fourth generation grower. And but we're up at Timbercrest Farms right on Dry Creek Road, man. And I still kind of, pinch myself every day I drive up that driveway. I'm like, wow, I got a winery in Dry Creek, California, man.
And you are the winemaker.
I am. I do pride myself on that. I have an assistant winemaker, Jeremy Parsons, and he's phenomenal. He's a chemistry background, chemistry degree, and he's a really good balance to my artistic ADD, I guess you would say. Yeah, I'm a little bit out there sometimes, and a lot of different things going on in my brain. But he is very calculated, and couldn't do it without him. Cellar master, Eliezer, he's phenomenal. But it takes a team. What do they say? It takes a village to make a wine, So
my thing is, it takes a village idiot to do the drive, and that's me. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Dan, your thoughts on Kokomo and the whole situation?
Discovered this brand about 7-8 years ago, and it was really sort of serendipitous. We sort of were going through a public tasting and going through. So it was one of those days where I was doing nothing but rosés. The whole day was rosé. If they didn't have a rosé, I wasn't interested. So no white, no red. And I stopped cold at this one. What was your first vintage of rosé?
2008.
Well, that was the one then.
Yeah.
And you stopped me cold because that stuff was phenomenal.
So
I was just blown away.
We got lucky, man. We planted Grenache in this vineyard that we've never done anything but make rosé out of this Grenache planting. And so, I guess that is another unique thing is that we do a vineyard designate Grenache Rosé. But sometimes, you just the right site and the right thing happens. But thank you.
Well, the other part of this thing is that you say serendipity, but I think it's more design because here's an idea. You make rosé. Your first one out of the box is bone dry and or close to bone dry. And it shocked me because the first time I'd ever seen your rosé, I'm thinking to myself, well, somebody understands balance here. Good acidity, low pH. It was a beautiful structured wine. And I said, what was the genesis of this? And they said, well, you've never done it before. Da, 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 da. And I'm thinking to myself, this wasn't an accident.
Well, and another thing that you can't. You brought up a couple of great points being that, bone dry and Grenache and that. But another thing that you can't deny about our rosé, and it's been this way from the beginning, the color.
Yeah.
And we started with that very pale, you know, salmon,
yeah.
And very pale, you know, paler than most. And I think it got people to realize right away that it was dry just from the color, not being that really pink. But and at first there was like, this is rosé? What? You know? And now it's become, you know, more people.
Well, Dan sent us an email today saying, today we have Eric Miller of Kokomo, which makes arguably the best rosé in the world.
That's a pretty good argument. Yeah, I'll go for that.
I mean, wow.
Last night we were out at dinner. We ordered a glass of rosé from the south of France. Beautiful wine, gorgeous wine. That's better by far. I'm thinking to myself, and I've been buying rosé since 1983. We've been drinking. Thank you very much. We've been drinking rosé.
Nice catch. Wow, that was a good one, Dan.
Just call me goalie. You know, I've been drinking rosé since 83 and writing about it since 83. And a lot of these things are a byproduct of technique. For a long time, people were making rosés that were heavy and darker. And instead, you're seeing this absolutely fabulous pale color.
The Sauve Blanc, please.
Sauve Blanc. Right in this glass here.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I think when you make a wine with a strategy in mind, and then the winemaker has complete control over everything from the moment of harvest, and that's critical. If you don't harvest it right, half the game is over. And if you don't make it right in the first couple of days of the fermentation, then the rest of the game is over. You can't. This is not a salvage operation, folks. This is start from scratch and you make it. In the winery.
And that's that. Now they call it intentional rosé.
Yeah.
And I think that's a cool, you know, I mean, there's Sonier, and there's nothing to say that you can't make great rosé. And I've talked to other winemakers. They're like, well, I think Sonier is even more difficult because I'm using all of these different lots and this and that. But we are farming it to the degree of farming it for rosé, which I guess in a lot of cases would mean, well, you could hang it more heavy and you could, you know, because you're just making rosé. But no, we drop fruit. We want to make sure that we're still getting that intensity on the palate. But like you say, Dan, right at the beginning, when that fruit is picked, you're making decisions that are going to change, like, I mean, you know, hours on skins. Not only is that color, and everyone looks at our color, how many hours on skin?
Stressful.
Well, it's tannins. In particularly Grenache, because Grenache has such bold tannins. And I think that's why you tend to see these lighter color rosés out of Grenache, because if you spend more time on skins, you will get these bigger tannic wines. And that's not what you're looking for. I always think of...
In a rosé.
Yeah, you want the crisp. I call it the... You know, the porch pounder. But, you know, you poolside, and you want that crisp, refreshing...
Hell yeah.
And that's what we're looking to do.
Well, the other thing, too, is that there are some people who like rosé, but they like sweet. And there's nothing wrong with that. You happen to like sweet, then buy the ones that are sweet.
Of course.
But if you
But
do,
I don't. And
well, I don't either. But those people who do like that, they are not focusing on the flavor. In this wine, if you don't understand Grenache by tasting this wine, then you're sort of missing the reason why this grape is the one in the world that really makes the best rosés. I mean, you look throughout the south of France, look throughout Aix-en-Provence, every single one of those is either dominated by Grenache or has a substantial amount of Grenache in it.
Really? Before we actually taste the rosé, which I can't wait, we're talking about the Sauvignon Blanc. This is 2018, and it has been released...
You know, so we released this to our, it's going to be in this next club shipment, and we just finished up our 17 and rolling into this 18. Yes,
wow.
So it has. Sauve Blanc and Rosé are two that we want to have that freshness, so they don't, you know, they don't actually 100% barrel on our Sauve Blanc on this one, so not new. And we use acacia as opposed to oak mainly.
Acacia.
Acacia wood. Yeah, it's a new thing.
I have not heard that before in the world of winemaking, but
it kind of lends a slightly different color to the wine too. It's sort of iridescent.
It's interesting as you taste these new acacia barrels. They're there for texture. They're not there for aromatics. So you're not getting the vanillins and the caramels, which we don't want in these crisp whites. But getting that nice texture that you get from a very, very light toast that they have on the acacia. But when they toast it, you know you're not getting the kind of caramel. sugars from it. So,
and Dan, tell me why I like this.
Well,
18 Sauvignon.
I think I know why you like this, but I'm not entirely sure, because we've had good Sauvignon Blancs before that were soft. This one is not soft. This is really crisp and dry. And the thing about it is, in my column in the Press Democrat 2 weeks ago, I talked about sweet Sauvignon Blancs from New Zealand and elsewhere. I'm seeing a lot of sweetness in Sauvignon Blanc. Eric made this wine the way a purist would make it. There's zero sugar here, and you taste the fact that this is a dry wine. That's why it's so beautifully structured. All you start to think about is, what fish am I going to serve this with?
Yeah.
It's not a sipping wine.
Or oysters. I always say oysters.
Is perfect.
Yeah.
I think a Sauv Blanc, it's, you know, as a winemaker, it's about the pyrazines. It's about,
yeah,
you pick it early, and then you got that, you know, we all call it something different. You know, there's the cat pea, there's the gooseberry, there's the, you know, it's that green. It kept almost asparagus in the New Zealand ones. But I like a little bit of that character, but our vineyard tends to show, instead of that mid-ripeness grapefruit, it goes into more lemon. So it does have the citrus, but...
Well, one of the reasons why Dry Creek is such a blessed region is that you do have both the warm and the cold nights, which allow you to keep that acidity. So, therefore, when you're making this wine, you don't have to work too hard to have a crispness in the finish.
And we do multiple picks. So this is representative of two different picks, which I'm sure...
Meaning two different vineyards?
Same vineyard, and I get the crew in there, which I think the only reason I'm able to do this, because I'm only picking, like, you know, what, 12, 14 tons that we get a year off of this, is because Randy's a partner in the winery. He understands what I'm trying to do. But we go in and we pick the first half, and we do that. We pull the leaves on some and some we don't. But we pick that first half, and I'm trying to capture that nice, fresh acidity, a different side of Sauvignon Blanc that has more of the grassy components to it. And then we come back 10 days later, pick that second pick, which is going to give me a little more fullness, a little more richness, and it tends to show us a little more of the tropical side of the varietal. And the thought is certainly to blend them together to have a more complex.
See, that's where I'm talking about. The strategy that starts the process is where you have to begin, because if you start to, you think about halfway through, you say, gee, maybe I should. No, you start at the beginning, you know what your philosophy is, and then you pick just for those components you want. If you were picking three times or four times, all of your strategies would be slightly different.
Yeah, with the end in mind.
Yeah, with the end. He knows the philosophy that's going to lead to the bottle.
Yeah, which is brilliant and beyond, way beyond me. I can't.
Well, I think the average winemaker Sonoma County knows this, because good winemaking exists throughout this county, and everybody's trying to do something similar. The only thing that's holding you back sometimes is working with the grower. Sometimes your grower is not real cooperative.
And hey, I don't blame them. I'm getting out there in the middle of the night to pick your pick when it's cold, because you don't want your fruit warm. I've got my crew out. We all are very sympathetic to the fact of, you know, hand picking grapes, and there's only a limited amount of pickers out there, and it is something that's more difficult every year. We have to call those picks certainly at least a week ahead of time. But to get them out in the same vineyard twice and to come back and clean it up at another time. We're lucky enough that Randy manages about 260 acres, so he has a full-time crew. So we've got our pickers that we can rely on, you know, a little more readily. But we're not completely insulated. There's certainly times when rain's coming, or we get that 2017 heat spike, and everyone's trying to pick, where it can still be a challenge.
California Wine Country with Dan Berger today, featuring our friend Eric Miller from Kokomo Wines. And I want to remind you that each episode of California Wine Country is podcast and podcasted. I think that's probably correct. I don't know. And it's available wherever great podcasts are offered. And you can also go to calwinecountry.com. And then, as Dan always says,
please subscribe.
Subscribe. I keep wanting to say register. Register on the thing with the stuff and the. Anyway, all the episodes here live on the drive or podcast at all those places, and calwinecountry.com. Yeah, that's the newest thing on the internet.
Right.
Yeah.
.com.
Go to the drive.com or clam. Let's do clam. I like that better because I'm a big clam fan. Eric Miller is here from Kokomo. Before we get into what Dan said is arguably the best rosé in the world, let's talk about this one that Eric just poured. This is amazing.
It's a stunning wine.
What do you call it?
You know, it's just something that I had Randy plant me 3/4 of an acre of Muscat. And when I did it, I was thinking, for possible blending in that. But he planted me, so we don't even have an acre of this. As I didn't realize at the time, well, that's going to yield me quite a bit. So we get about 3-4 tons off of it, depending
really?
On the vintage.
Wow.
I kind of designed it for late harvest as well. So we do a late harvest on some vintages when the vintage is right with the Muscat. In 2017 here, we bottled it as a dry, bone-dry Muscat Blanc.
Muscat Blanc.
Which is...
That's pretty much... You came up with that, and are there other Muscat Blancs anywhere?
Yeah, there's a couple. I think what... And I would ask...
Well, there's one in British Columbia from a small property called Joie Farm, J-O-I-E-F-A-R-M. They make a bone-dry Muscat as well. There's also one in Michigan from a very small producer there. They make about 300 cases.
Really?
It's not
They're
very...
making Muscat in my home state.
Yes, sir.
Oh.
The thing about it is that Muscat is a tricky variety because it can be bitter. And if it ends up to be bitter or you end up with a problem with it, the only cure really is sugar. And by the time you've figured it out, it's all dry. So the question is, how do you make it? And this is a tricky, tricky thing to make. You must have made a couple of vintages of this before you decided to make it commercial.
Yeah, no, I probably, the first time I did it dry, it did have a little bit of residual sugar in it, and we stopped it on purpose. I thought it needed that for the palate. As I've got to know the wines a little bit better or the varietal, I've kicked it down a notch in sugar. So this is probably the second vintage that we did it where we did it bone dry. I was talking to another wine person, and they were telling me about noble Alsatian varietals. Mm-hmm. There's only four. You know, and
right.
Of course it's Gewurz and Riesling, and then it's Pinot Blanc.
Right.
And the fourth being?
Muscat.
Muscat.
Which they pronounce Musca.
Musca, which I was like, it's a noble Alsatian varietal. But, of course, you know, here in the States, we tend to have a thought of Moscato.
Well, but Muscat in Alsace is utilized for Gianti and for Edelzwigger. So those wines tend to be slightly sweet.
Geek alert.
Time out. Okay.
Edelzwigger?
Who? Edelzwigger.
Is that a cheese?
No, it's a blended white wine.
Wow. Okay. Never heard of it.
Yeah, that's why I asked Dan. I'm like, you know,
yeah, exactly.
I've heard this, Dan. Is this true? You know, so.
Edelzwigger, Mucker, Mucker. I don't know.
It's Hungarian. Whatever.
But, you know, I think these wines and the Alsatian wines in particular, they hit this spot of spicy foods.
Mm.
They hit that, you know, your Indian and your Thai and some of these foods that you find it difficult to pair wines with. And that was what I was thinking with this.
This would work great with mild Indian curries. But if you've got hot Indian curries, you need some more sugar. This doesn't have any sugar. So it's going to be a challenge to go up against really spicy food.
This is delightful.
Oh, I love it.
Me too. It's,
patio sipper.
It's so dry. What's the alcohol in this, Eric?
This is 12.9.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Good.
That is low, but perfect for this, right, Dan?
Oh, yeah. Delightful. Just beautiful wine.
Wow.
Hard to find dry muscats.
Yeah, I don't know. When we serve it at the bar, we have to tell people, like, no, try it. I'm good on muscat. No, you ought to try it. You know, you might like this one, but so it's a little different. But I thought with this crowd, you know, I had to bring something.
Oh, no, that's killer. Yeah. I'm taking that home and making chicken tonight.
Okay.
Will that work?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The problem with a lot of muscats is that they don't say dry on the label. This does not say dry on the label. You put it on the back label?
Dry now? I guess I should, huh?
All right. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, you probably should, man.
The sugar content scale.
Right.
Use that.
It's Eric Miller, founder, head guy, and winemaker at Kokomo Wines. I want to get into where you guys are, tasting room situation and stuff.
Yeah, we're right on Dry Creek Road, 4791. So we're about a mile and a half past the general store as you're heading out towards the lake. And
right.
We're
cool.
Open 7 days a week. And, you know, I've come to embrace that – that I named this thing after my hometown, and my hometown is, you know, being from Michigan, we're from the Rust Belt, and it's like a very – people are like, you must have grew up on a farm. You grew up in Indiana. And I'm like, actually, I was inner city Kokomo, and they laugh, and I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of a factory town, and I grew up in town. I certainly wasn't on a farm.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
So I try to keep the vibe of the place to have that, you know, the Midwestern roots, which is that, you know, down-to-earth chill.
I
know,
love it, man.
My favorite table in the winery, man, is this manhole cover. Says City Sewer, City of Kokomo, you know, that we've made into this table. It kind of sets the tone, you know what I mean?
It is California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn and Della Tofola. Dan Berger, of course, my co-host, and today we're featuring our friend Eric Miller from Kokomo Wines, kokomowines.com.
That's correct.
We're still about to get into, this is like, you know, the rosé is going to be like the closing act. Yeah, we've had some amazing opening acts, but we're about to get into this rosé that Dan Berger is just enamored with.
Absolutely.
But Eric's about to open a bubbly, a sparkling wine. I didn't realize you guys did this, man.
Yeah, you know, so I did all whites. I figured, well, it's a beautiful day in Sonoma County.
You betcha, bud.
Spring is coming, man. And I know my guy Jackson over here is more of, you know, the Chardonnay. Didn't bring Chardonnay, but
that's fine.
I brought Chardonnay in form of this Blanc de Blanc.
Yeah, talk about this.
So Randy Peters is Peter's Vineyard, and it was his, should I say 60th? Yeah, it was his 60th birthday, man. And so anyway, this started when he was about 57, I believe.
Wow.
He's going, well, I'm going to turn 60 in about 3 years. I want to see my Chardonnay as a bubbles, you know, as a sparkling wine. So I said, okay, you know, let's do it up. So we did that in 2012 was the first vintage.
Hmm.
And then released that, you know, I remember we did the dosage trials at his 60th birthday. We didn't have it bottled then. It was the dosage trial. So we went to dinner at Madrona Manor, and we brought all these different sparkling dosage. And what we like,
and dosage is where the horses run.
That's dressage.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
I know, man. Once you throw a French term in, it just everyone just shuts down. So, but that is where you come back with a level of sweetness, if you so desire, and or cognac to finish off the wine. What we decided is that we, and I say we, even as me and Dan here, we love acid. You like acid?
He's always well.
Yeah,
high school and college. I was all over it, but it had nothing to do with wine.
No.
But, but Dan always talks about the acid in wine, and it's a major thing.
Well, it's the soul of wine. If you don't have it, you have grape juice. I mean, you know, what it comes down to.
It's the blessing of our Sonoma County coastal influence, man. If we did not have this coast bringing in those cool, cool nights like that, we would not have this beautiful acidity.
So what year
And you
is
know what
this?
They say? If you got it,
flaunt it.
Flaunt it.
What's the year on this?
So this is a 2014. We do all method champenois, meaning that we leave this at least 2 years on its lees, and we do up to three. On its lees before we disgorge it. And so this is something that we're pretty proud of. Randy planted these vines in 1982. And I'm trying to think, what was I? Yes, I was like, you know, 5 years old, 6 years old. 1982 when Randy planted this vineyard. And he's out there in what we call Sebastopol Hills. They did a write-up on it, the Principino guy, and we found that, you know, Randy was the first to plant in the Sebastopol Hills area, which is southwest Sebastopol. He's off of Elphick Road there.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, planting and kind of, I call that kind of visionary, because at that time, you know, being from Dry Creek, his buddies were like, why are you planting Chardonnay and Pinot 8 miles off the coast? You know it's going to rot. You know it's going to be a bear to ripen. And there's certainly vintages that are more difficult to ripen than others out there with some of the early rains, because we're not picking, you know, our still Chardonnay until we're picking Cabernet in Dry Creek, you know, in October.
The nose on this sparkling is I can't quite nail it,
well,
but it's wonderful.
It wants to be vanilla, but it's not vanilla yet. Yeah. So it's not. It's like a precursor. But the more interesting thing about this is that the yeast component you've captured is so delicate. It's beautiful, and it's subtle. It doesn't have that overwhelming, like, brioche and kind of roasted grain thing that sometimes creeps into these. These are really, this is a fresh, it actually, I think, would benefit from about 2 to 3 more years in the cellar, because right now the wine is really kind of tightened up, but it's gorgeous, gorgeous Chardonnay fruit.
We always talk about decanting, sparkling wine?
You had Eileen Crane on the show a few months ago, mm-hmm. and Eileen Crane and I and Julianne were having dinner with her about 5 years ago, and I said, boy, wouldn't it be nice if there was a way for us to decant sparkling? And she said, in an ideal world, that's the best thing to do. But she said, you risk losing too many bubbles. And she said, I don't know how to fix that.
And then it goes flat?
Yeah. Well, it would go flat faster than you want it to.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. But she's pointing out that there are some subtle characteristics in champagne that sometimes, I mean, from France in particular, where the equipment wasn't perfect, and you end up with a problem in terms of the aroma. Winemakers can pick it up. I can't. I mean, it's way too over the top for me. But every now and then I hear a winemaker who even made their own bubbly, and they say, oh, this has got some, okay, that's funky, or whatever it is. And I'm saying to myself, well, that's really esoteric stuff. So I would not decant sparkling. But at least Eileen Crane acknowledges that if there were a way to capture all the bubbles, that would be
right.
better for the wine.
Right. Eric, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I just think that sparkling is one of those things that's we're talking about rosé, and that's a big trending kind of category right now. Sparkling, too, it's, you know, been around forever. I think with particularly us in California, but even around the country a bit, it's like it doesn't have to be New Year's to pop a bottle of bubbles.
Well, of course not.
You talk about oysters and stuff, too, you know.
It's fabulous.
Lunchtime, bubbles like this, and it's something that I've really gravitated. And it takes you a bit to really grab the palate and, you know, in the acid that they have. But they're so awesome with food. We have this event every year. And it's open to the public. It sells out pretty quick. There's about 30, 35 people. It's right in the middle of our Old Vine Zen vineyard behind the winery, and we call it Birds and Bubbles. I got turned on to this idea. I was in this old gas station in North Carolina, and I was with this sales rep, and she goes in the gas station and comes out with this phenomenal fried chicken, some of the best I've ever had. From the back of this gas station, where this guy's frying up this chicken, right? And we pop a, you know, a champagne, you know, a really nice champagne. And she's like, this is my favorite pairing in the world, is this, you know, fried chicken and sparkling and champagne like that. And so it blew me away. I came home and started an event around the thing. We call it Birds and Bubbles. We have Backyard, which makes phenomenal fried chicken. They come out in the vineyard and fry it up.
Yes,
Jackson,
they do.
I got to have you out for it, man.
Do you do it?
We do that in July and August. We two dates. It's a Friday lunch that we do on our website if you wanted to check it out. But it's just cool. It's an intimate event and, you know, shows that where the acid of the bubbles can cut right through the fried chicken.
I'll be there this summer. Dan Kadan and Backyard,
some of
my favorite fried chicken.
This is really a remarkable bubbly in one other respect. It leads us back to both the Sauvignon Blanc and the Muscat, because both of those wines are anchored by good acidity. This one has got brilliant acidity. And the reason is you left the dosage just high enough to cut through what otherwise would be screaming acidity. In this particular case, you've got a perfect structure. There's no way you can not enjoy this by itself, but I would imagine it would get that much better with some kind of food with it. But don't put sweet foods with it, because this wine is pretty, the after taste is pretty crisp. You don't want to sacrifice the mid palate of this wine on the altar of that high acidity.
Louis, our doggy guy, is here. He's our he's in charge of everything around here.
Is he still here?
He's wandering.
Louis's hanging, man. He's got a feeling homey, right?
He's always here on Wine Wednesday at California Wine Country. Oh, they're drinking wine.
There he is.
Hi, Louis.
Good boy.
Smart guy.
Eric Miller here is here. He is the founder and winemaker at Kokomo Wines, kokomowines.com. Talk more about the tasting room and the events you guys do. You just mentioned the thing this summer.
Yeah, you know, we definitely, in the tasting room, we try to have this philosophy of we have this thing in Indiana. Of course, I'm a Boilermaker because I'm from Purdue, right?
Yeah, but I'm a Wolverine, even though I went to Michigan State. But I'm a Spartan and a Wolverine.
We just shared the Big Ten title with you, you know, Purdue
and
Michigan
State.
So that was good. That was good for us. But we still are called Hoosiers for whatever reason, even if we're from Purdue, because we're from Indiana.
Right.
We have this thing called Hoosier Hospitality, which is just this, really welcoming, opening, open feeling that you would get. And Ross James is our tasting room manager. He's been there for 8 years. Him and his team that we have just has this way, and it's so awesome, of just, hospitality. And it's such a cool thing that I definitely would encourage anyone to come up and check us out and just test me on our hospitality, because we pride ourselves on it. Of course, we want to make great wines, and that's something that we, feel like we're obligated to do. Hospitality is one of those things where it's a feeling you get when you're in the place, and it's something we do pride ourselves on. But where we're at on this vineyard, Timbercrest Vineyard, special place, old place. A lot of people know it in Sonoma County, where they went up to Timbercrest to buy their dried fruit back in the day. One of the first certified organic farms that you could possibly, they got their certification in the 60s or 70s.
Wow.
The first that came out.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, dried all the fruit with no sulfur, all organically grown there, and they were doing that for years, selling it to the, as they said, the hippies at the little health food stores, but then those little health food stores in every community went out, and they started to have those in Costco's and whatnot. But the owner who still lives there, his name's Ronald Walton Spilly, he's 85, decided to retire in 2002, and it just really opened up this gem for myself and a couple of our neighbors to be able to move in there. Partnering up with the grower has given me the ability to kind of like discover this vineyard. So I get to kind of cherry pick this 120 acre vineyard. We do everything from Merlot on that vineyard to Malbec, Zinfandel, of course, Primitivo, the Sauvignon Blanc that we had today, the Muscat Blanc that we had today, Petite Syrah we have a little bit. So we grow a lot of fruit on the vineyard, and it's really, kind of become my playground, man. It's such a cool opportunity.
You got a great gig, dude, just like me. Okay, it's time.
I think it's time for the unveiling
rosé. Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
I've been lusting for this for about an hour here.
And Dan, as I quoted you in the email today as to how much you love this rosé from Kokomo.
Yeah.
Explain to everyone.
You have to appreciate the fact that Julianne and I drink a lot of wine.
Gee, really?
That's one of the hazards of our...
Is he lying, Julianne?
No.
He's not lying, no, I know.
We have a strategy that comes down to something very simple. You pick it up, you taste it. If it tastes good, you drink it. If it doesn't taste good, you throw it away and get something else. It's real... That's right. We have to smell it, too. Right?
Oh, my God.
All right. But
you're not
kidding
about this.
No, this is serious. But when I first tasted this wine, I tracked it for the following couple of years, and by sometime around, 2011 or something like that, it suddenly dawned on me that I had to compare this in other ways to other wines. We always buy rosé. I guess we stop in Bottle Barn periodically and just grab 6 or 8 bottles of rosé, and we sit on the front porch and we offer the neighbors. Nobody comes over, but anyway.
Are
we drinking?
Never invited me, so
yeah, it's right there on the corner. So
because then you couldn't get rid of me. Yeah. Look at this wine cellar.
I can imagine.
I'm moving in, Dan.
I can imagine Dan's wine cellar.
But interestingly enough, the Kokomo held its own against everything, including Trinquedal, which for years Trinquedal was my number one go-to rosé from the south of France. Fabulous wine. This kid, it could be beating it every single year. Every year, so we'd say, okay, it's time for our test again. Trinquedal versus Kokomo. And Kokomo always won, so I figured, why not? It's the best rosé I've ever tasted. So.
Now, what's the year on this, Eric?
This is our fresh 2018, so this is the brand new vintage, and it's been amazing, to think that we would have a culty rosé, and it's really become that. So what it ended up being, this is a vineyard designate. I have to remind people, It's Pauline's vineyard. So what we have planted there is all we have. Our production has stopped. Now Pauline's is fully planted to Grenache, and we do a Merlot and a Zinfandel from Pauline's vineyard, but it's fully planted. So all the Grenache rosé that we're able to make, we're making now currently. So we have the production up right now, and we're about 700-800 cases, of which has been 100% direct, except for what we sell to a couple of our friends, a couple restaurants. This year, I was getting enough heat that I said, okay, we're going to open it up to people who are not wine club members, a two-bottle limit, just so we can, you know, we want people to taste the rosé. It will sell out by June. It does every year. But if you do come up and you're not a wine club member, we want to make sure that you're able to at least get a bottle or two of this. So got a couple of our friends, you know, Vinny over at Russian River has been serving this rosé by the glass now for a couple of years, which we're just thrilled about. One of our favorite
Vinny accounts. And Natalie love their wine.
It's amazing how much of this rosé they go through. I'm like, wow.
You know, they're so known for Russian River brewing and the new place and the beer.
Cool people.
Oh, they love their wine.
Yeah, and one of my favorite accounts. And a couple restaurants that have really always supported this. And we want to make sure that we think that it's a food wine, and we want to make sure that it gets into some restaurants, but it's taken a life of its own.
Well, the one thing about rosé for years has always been, what's the sugar? And if it doesn't have enough sugar, then it can be a little bit austere. Winemakers tend to shy away from that style because the faster it sells, the more sugar it has, the more it typically sells. So that's what I encourage people who are making styles of wine like this to charge $25, $30, $35 for it, to keep away the tire kickers. You don't want those folks buying this wine and then putting in a tablespoon of sugar. That's not what it's about.
Yeah.
Or ice cubes. I mean, just forget that, all right? So then we had a period of time, probably about 97, 98, 99, where rosé hit the wall because nobody was making enough of it. The good ones were making 150 cases or 300 cases.
Nothing.
And it was nothing. And I kept encouraging more, more, more. And then Cundy finally broke the style point about 4 years ago and started making about 3,500 cases. And it was dry enough, and it was really nicely made and so forth. And so we started to begin to see 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 cases.
Every time you come in, man, you just blow us away.
But I have a question for you. What do you think of that rosé?
I love it. Now, I wanted to ask you, when I first took a sip, I'm getting some sweetness, but it all works out in the end.
It's balance.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
No sugar there. Nothing.
I know. It's just.
It's all. If you drank this 2 years from today, you'd say wine's not perfect.
Why am I getting 10 fingers already? It's fine.
But now
what?
It's perfect.
Yeah, no. Oh, 1 minute. Okay.
Chemistry-wise, it is bone dry, but it has this fruit on it.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Yeah. It's so perfectly fruity that my first.
I tend to think of it as like the rind of the watermelon. As you're getting close to the rind, and it's that white part of the watermelon where it's got
which
some
I
mineral.
Love.
Yeah,
you know, it's
no,
right
and the
there.
Finish, mid palate and the finish are
it's
perfect.
Those two pieces, the mid palate and finish, are really where this wine is. Right now, it's still yet. I would say about 3 weeks. It's going to expand, and then it'll go. So you want? Trust me, if you can get any of this, buy a case. And watch it for a year. It'll be your joy.
And by the way, Eric, Barry Herbst, who's with us when he's not in France, which he is now.
Yes.
The wine buyer at Bottle Barn said, "Oh, we love Kokomo. We don't get enough. They want more."
Good dude, man. Good dude.
He is. So, Eric Miller.
We want to support them. That's for sure.
Eric Miller from Kokomo Wines. They do great stuff. KokomoWines.com.